Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup Podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burda, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, August 13th. If you know me, you know I'm a sucker for a man bites dog story. You expect a dog to bite a man, but you don't expect a man to bite a dog. It's a story that bucks conventional wisdom, challenges widely held beliefs, or rebuts statements accepted as gospel. On today's show, we're going to talk about a possible man bites dog story based on a new report from the Congressional Budget Office. To tell us who's biting who are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How you two doing this morning? Dave?
Well, it's been an absolutely crazy week. Blue Angels buzzing downtown Chicago as they train for this weekend's air and water show. Tornadoes and torrential rain on Tuesday. And Tuesday also happened to be Terry and my 42nd wedding anniversary.
Aww.
Evidently, we were each 10 years old when we got married. So,
congratulations.
Julie, how are you?
I'm well. The smoke has cleared. And, you know, it's been beautiful. It's, I have to say, for summer, it is not a dull summer. It's been busy, but good.
Keeps the trouble away, right?
That's right.
All right. Before we talk about this new CBO report, let's talk about your favorite man bites dog story in healthcare. Dave, do you recall reading a story in healthcare that totally challenged what you thought up to that point?
My man bites dog isn't really something I read in the paper as much as a trip I made right after I founded Foresight to India, where I toured Narayana Health, the kind of low-cost, high-volume health system in India, and saw that they ran their ORs 7 days a week from 7 in the morning until 2, 3, you know, the next morning till they ran out of patients, had entire teams of operating engineers trying to figure out how to extend the life of equipment, find lower cost substitutes, anything, everything to reduce per unit costs. And they were doing, you know, complicated bypass surgeries for $2,500 US at a time when US companies was charging, you know, often six figures. And so that's when I just decided this idea that you can't do surgeries on weekends or nights or whatever was just nonsense. And we perpetuated this whole system. So that was my man bites dog story when I decided to call BS on a lot of what is considered conventionalism in U.S. healthcare.
Yeah, keeping bankers' hours when people are sick, not good, not good.
Golfing on Wednesday afternoons.
Yeah, that's how it was. Thanks, Dave. And I candied for a lot of them, too, back in the
bad
day.
Bad tippers. That's what you said.
Bad tippers. Julie, how about you? Was there a story that you read that completely changed the way you viewed healthcare?
For me, it's just not one story. It's been this journey of being the inside change maker person who discovered that food was the issue and Virta Health could actually, you know, reverse your type 2 diabetes. And then will a drug come along and save us all? And the GLP-1s come out. So I have these moments in time when our reality is really put in check. And they're big moments. They make me think a lot about how I spend my time.
For me, it was this little box that ran periodically in HFN magazine years ago, published by the Healthcare Financial Management Association. It was this tiny little standalone infographic, and I forgot the name of it. I think I have it in a file somewhere. It would have this stat on the percentage of hospital expenses that went to charity care. You know, it was actual charity care that hospitals provided without any expectation of payment. And the figure, month over month, year after year, every time I saw that box, was about 1%. And, you know, until I saw that little infographic, I assumed hospitals were spending half their money on care for the poor. You know, at least that's what the hospital lobby wanted you to think. And I clearly was wrong. And it totally changed the way I thought of healthcare from then on. And then I, you know, saw healthcare as a business, just like any other business, and no business gives away what it's selling, right? They weren't giving it away, not at all. So, not at all. Well, a new CBO report is out that may change the way you think. I'm going to share some of the top line findings from the report, and I want you to think about them in light of all the stories we've been seeing in the mainstream media and the healthcare trade press about hospitals seeing more uninsured patients than ever. The report is called Federal Subsidies for Health Insurance, 2026 to 2036. The CBO essentially scored the financial impact of all the healthcare spending provisions in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. The report said federal subsidies for health insurance will rise from $2.4 trillion this year to $3.9 trillion in 2036, or about 6.3% over 10 years. As a percentage of GDP, that's an increase from 7.4% this year to 8.4% in 10 years. Total federal subsidies for health insurance will be $33.6 trillion over that period, with most of that going to Medicare, 48%, Medicaid and CHIP, 25%, and employment-based coverage, 21%. The number of uninsured will rise from 30 million this year to 37 million in 2036, but about 60% of the uninsured will be eligible for subsidized health insurance through their employer, the ACA, or a government-run health insurance program. Not quite the doomsday scenario that I assumed, or maybe it is a doomsday scenario for people without coverage and the hospitals and doctors who treat them. I don't know. That's why you two are here. Dave, dog bites man, or man bites dog, and why? And assuming these numbers are accurate, what business model changes would you make if you ran a hospital, health system, medical practice, or a health plan?
Definitely man bites dog. Let's start with some back of the envelope math. So the federal subsidies are $2.4 trillion. This year. That pencils out roughly to about $8,000 for every man, woman, and child in the United States. And believe it or not, that's roughly equivalent to what the United Kingdom spends on healthcare per person from both public and private sources. So just what our federal government spends is equal to what Britain spends from both public and private sources for everybody in the country. And that's obviously before we take into account the additional revenues that come from states, counties, employers, individuals. It's just crazy. And this is happening while our number of uninsured is increasing, not decreasing. Say what? So is it enough money? Of course it is. And what I've said forever, it's not how much we spend, it's how we spend it. So you go down another level, look at the subsidies themselves, and you discover that they are fragmented and remarkably varied. So Medicare subsidy per enrollee is $27,000 a year. Medicaid CHIP is $13,000. Employer-based healthcare is $5,000. That's essentially the benefit of the tax breaks that the government grants to employers. And then the non-group coverage, which includes things like the ACA subsidies, ends up being about $11,500. So different programs, different rules, different amounts of subsidy. And I guess as I look at this, I just can't get Romer's Law out of my head. For the uninitiated, Milton Romer was a healthcare economist at UCLA in the 1960s. As Medicare was rolling out, and he made this very prescient observation, which is in the presence of third-party payment, supply creates its own demand. So the demand we get in healthcare is a function of the third-party payment. Supply is driving demand, not the other way around, which is the way it usually works. So it's just unbelievable how right he's been. And what we're ended up with is this subsidy paradox, for lack of a better term. Subsidies lower individual costs, right? You know, Dave, what you and I pay for Medicare, but they end up driving up the overall cost to the system that we all pay for indirectly, you know, through higher taxes, through higher out-of-pockets, through higher insurance premiums. And the industry's just gotten very good at pushing cost increases onto others. And so it's pretty clear that subsidies aren't the answer. What we really need is payment reform with aligned business reform, these things we know to be true, yet we don't do at scale. So if I'm running a hospital health system, short answer, come on, people. The jig is up. We know what's going on. The government's already skinnied down state-directed payments, which is one of the ways that the industry spends other people's money. It's coming after other things as well, 340B hospital-based pricing and so on. So what's my advice? Stop playing hot potato with other people's money. Focus on value creation and improving end user experience. Be a constructive player. Help create the building blocks for a better U.S. healthcare system. Don't delay. Don't pass go. Start today.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, before I ask you if you have any questions for Dave, I just want to say thank you for subsidizing my health insurance and Dave's health insurance. That is very generous of you and your tax dollars.
Great. You're welcome. I'm sorry. You're welcome. Yeah.
All right. Great. All right. Any questions for Dave, Julie?
All right, Dave. I think it's interesting when you look at some of the health systems that were talked about here, Tenet was the only one of the major for-profits that didn't miss on the uninsured hit this quarter. And everyone else is, of course, calling it a major headwind. So do you know what Tenet is up to and doing differently than our friends at HCA and CHS and UHS?
I wouldn't prescribe any incredible insight into what they're doing, but they have systematically, over the last decade or so, diminished their corporate reliance on hospital-based revenues and pushed to ambulatory revenues. And you just aren't going to get as exposed to the uninsured and covering those related costs when you're running ambulatory centers as opposed to hospitals. So I just think they're playing the current game very smartly. It's still a bad game, but they're playing it very smartly.
They are, like we always say, following the money. Thanks, Dave. Okay, Julie, it's your turn. Bites man or man bites dog and why? And if you were a healthcare tech company, how would you tweak your business model to course correct for these CBO numbers, if at all?
Well, I think it's both. And I guess, you know, that's the story. My dog bites man as subsidies go up, right? In the federal budget's default setting, that's what it is. It's gone up every year since Medicare existed. So we shouldn't be shocked by this. My man bites dog is buried in the math. You know, you just read the American Action Forum did the math nobody wants to talk about, which is this whole subsidies gap, right? Subsidies grow by 65% and GDP grows by 46%. And as they say, the math ain't mathin'. It's not good.
I've never heard that before. I will tell you, though, that math is the only subject that counts.
But,
great.
Oh, we're in a good mood. So I think the complementary point the CBO report can't see because it's forecasting out to 2036 is happening right now. And it's kind of what I just asked Dave. You know, HCA's uncompensated care bill was up 29% year over year last quarter, and Tenet's is up 14%. Like it's a big difference between those two. And HCA CFO says that patients are losing ACA coverage and going uninsured at close to a one-to-one basis, not shopping down to a cheaper plan, just disappearing entirely. So I think some of the stories here of what's really happening are current. And the CBO's 37 million uninsured number for 2036 is a projection, right? Hospitals are already living this if you look at the Q2 earnings call. So if I'm running a health tech company, here's where I think about moving the business model, or I think a lot of companies are looking at this as part of their business model today. First is, you know, eligibility navigation is a nice to have, but it's not where we should totally be. We should sell it as a, not a benefits feature, but as a revenue cycle product almost. Like 60% of the future uninsured are already eligible for subsidized coverage and they're not enrolled. So it's okay, is it a policy failure? Sure, but it's actually an addressable market if you think about it, you know, the other way around. So I build tools that catch that person at registration or in the ED and convert them before they become a bad debt write-off and, you know, price it against the uncompensated care and not PMPM. There's a lot there. Second, I'd follow the money into Medicare. And you're seeing so many health systems still chasing after the commercial patients when 48% of the $33.5 trillion is really Medicare. So if your roadmap is still centered on the ACA, you're building for a smaller and smaller slice. So risk adjustment, MA administration, Medicare fee for service, automation, that's the growth curve. And third, I'd architect for policy whiplash, honestly, as a kind of a permanent condition, not an exception. These subsidy rules are changing, I don't know, like annually. So if your eligibility logic is hard-coded, you're going to be rebuilding your product every open enrollment. It's just kind of our new reality.
Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
Well, Julie, you referenced this briefly, that CBO projects federal healthcare spending and subsidies will grow 65% between this year and 2036, while the overall economy is just growing at 46%. That math ain't mathin'. Was that your phrase? In practical terms, what does this growth differential imply, and how concerned should we be about it? And maybe even more to the point, if you're a beneficiary of this, do you really think it can continue?
I love how we ask ourselves rhetorical questions. So,
yes.
I mean, in addition to the fact that spending is nearly 1.5 times faster than the economy's, that's supposed to fund it. And the uninsured number, I guess, is also still going up, right? Not down. So this is not a funding gap. It's a machine, like Dave, you said, is optimized for spending more, not covering more. And the AAF, calls the subsidy a subsidy trap. Every dollar of assistance takes pressure off the system to actually get cheaper. So next year's ask is bigger, right? That's the supply side you talked about.
Yeah.
So the underlying problem never gets solved. And I don't know, the provocative headline hiding inside a budget document is that we're not buying coverage. We're really buying time, right? That's what this feels like.
Kicking that can down the road.
Yeah, we're good at that.
My kids will be subsidizing your health insurance, Julie, right? It'll come around.
That's right.
Yeah. I was saying buying time, but the clock is ticking.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to call this CBO report Man Bites Dog. I think there will be challenges, but the sky is not falling. Now let's talk about other big healthcare news that happened this past week. Julie, what else happened that we should know about?
Well, I don't know how closely you follow or know Kadar, who used to run IHI of IHI fame, but he, practicing doc for years, super thoughtful, co-founder of one of our companies, Qualified Health, has just joined the Blue Shield of California board. And when I see things like this happen, I get excited because Kadar is the kind of person who understands the levers that need to move and how things need to get changed. So I always have hope when a health plan puts someone like that on their board that there's actual real change close by.
Elevating governance. We talked about that a few weeks ago.
That's right.
Thanks, Julie. Dave, what's your big healthcare news of the week?
Well, Julie, when you go high, I'm going low.
Right.
Excellent.
I've been watching this brewing kerfuffle occurring in Congress right now over surprise billing. It's like no honor among thieves. The impetus is the Wall Street Journal a couple of weeks ago published a piece that said the awards were $15 billion in 2025, which was 3 times the award level in 2024. And the payers and the providers are blaming one another for this. And they're each got their own lobbying fix. Guess who's going to win and guess who's going to lose when that occurred. But just to put this in perspective, the Biden administration, as it was coming into office, the surprise billing was passed during the Trump administration because it was predicted there would be 17,000 cases per year submitted to the arbitrators. The number last year was 2.6 million. Talk about a massive swing and miss. So anyway, stay tuned to this one.
Projections, right? Projections. Yeah. There you go.
Well, you know what Yogi Berra said, right? He said, predictions are difficult, especially about the future.
And he was right. And you guys are right. Thanks, Dave, and thanks, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to the Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.